Last time I talked, we talked about the story of Samson. Today we're continuing our study, and here was a quick summary of last time. Last time we talked about Samson's birth and the instructions given to Samson's parents by an angel of God. We learned God knows us before we are even born. He has a plan for us if we only let Him control our lives. We also learned God's prenatal instructions are supreme. What the mother eats and drinks affects the well-being of the child. Also, it is important to pray to God and beg Him to teach you the way He wants you to bring up your children. Then be thankful for all God has given you. Lastly, trust in God always, for He will give you wisdom and understanding. Today, I have a disclaimer. I'm going to be reading from the Bible, and it looks like I'm not reading from the Bible. I'm reading from the expanded version. Anybody know what that one is? That's where you photocopy and enlarge it so you can see it. It's actually the Revised Standard Version I'll be reading from. Today, the story is about Samson's first marriage, found in Judges chapter 14 and 15. We're going to hear a lot of premarital advice, so stay tuned. But before we get into Samson's story, I want to tell you my story of how Barb and I met and got married. She didn't want me to do this, but she consented. This is my favorite story, and I love telling it over and over. So if you've heard it before, Barb is sorry you have to bear through it again. It all started back when Barb was a senior at Oak Park Academy in Iowa, when a group of her friends and she were discussing what they were going to do in the future and where they were going to college. When it came to Barb's turn, she stated that she was going to college on the West Coast at Walla Walla College. They laughed and said, "I doubt that will ever happen." Right then and there, Barb's stubbornness determined it was going to happen. Well, a few months later, as Barb's mother put her on the plane in Iowa to fly to Walla Walla, her mother was crying and saying, "I'm going to lose you to a young man on the West Coast, and you will move far away from home." Well, 4 years later, Barb graduated from Walla Walla College with a BS in nursing, single. Did we go on any dates at that time when she was at Walla Walla? Yes, we did. Did we know each other at Walla Walla? Yes, we did. But we went on one date. You see, I was already engaged. Engaged to my studies as a pre-med student, and nothing was to distract me from accomplishing my goals. Well, needless to say, her mother was happy that she did not meet and fall in love with a West Coast boy. She had her safe and sound back in the Midwest. About a year and a half later, her best friend in college, Diane, who was a friend of mine at Milo Academy, graduated from Walla Walla College with her nursing degree. Barb flew out to Portland so they could drive back to Chicago together where they had nursing jobs. Diane lived in Medford, Oregon, and as they were driving down from Portland past Sutherland, Diane said, "Should we stop by and say hello to Luke and see what he's up to?" To which Barb replied, "That would be a waste of time." But Diane did it anyway, and Diane surprised me with her visit. They asked me if I wanted to come down that weekend to visit them in Medford before they drove out to Chicago on Monday. I said sure, and after they left, Barb again was annoyed at Diane for inviting me. When Barb and Diane got to Chicago, Barb's mother said to herself, "Safe and sound again." But needless to say, that meeting in Medford led to a trip to Hawaii 4 months later, where Barb and I fell in love on the beaches of Waikiki. A year later, we got married on Barb's grandparents' farm in Hawkeye, Iowa. Well, we were in the Midwest together for 4 years while I was in medical school and residency in Kansas City, Missouri, and then in Des Moines, Iowa. Her mom ended up liking me, even though I took her to the West Coast, and my parents loved her because she was a kind Seventh-day Adventist Christian girl. Now for the sermon. Let's bow our heads. Dear God, we ask you to come to be with us today as we worship you. Help me to be able to tell from your Bible the story of Samson, and give me words of wisdom to say that will give us lessons in life so that we can learn and not make the same mistakes. In thy holy name, amen. Chapter 14 starts after Samson was grown. Verse 1 and 2. Samson went down to Timnah, and at Timnah he saw one of the daughters of the Philistines. Then he came up and told his father and mother, "I saw one of the daughters of the Philistines at Timnah. Now get her for me as my wife." Boys, don't you wish it was that easy today? What happened to Samson? Was he behaving abnormally? No, he simply grew up and developed male hormones. That's the way God made Samson and you and me. He was attracted to the opposite sex. In our family, we call that Twitterpated. Is there anything wrong with that? No, that's the way God made us. Verse 3. But his father and mother said to him, "Is there not a woman among the daughters of your kinsmen or among all of our people that you must go take a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines?" But Samson said to his father, "Get her for me, for she pleases me well." What happened to Samson in that verse? Did he follow God's plan for him? No, he did not follow God's plan for him. He did not heed his parents' advice. He sought the girl of another religion. Patriarchs and Prophets, page 563, says, "Just as he was entering upon manhood, the time when he must execute his divine mission, the time above all others when he should have been true to God, Samson connected himself with the enemies of Israel. He did not ask whether he could better glorify God when he was united with the object of his choice, or whether he was placing himself in a position where he could not fulfill the purpose to be accomplished by his life. To all who seek to follow God, God promises wisdom, but there is no promise to those who are bent on self-pleasing. A young woman dwelling in the Philistine town of Timnah engaged Samson's affection, and he determined to make her his wife. To his God-fearing parents, who endeavored to dissuade him from his purpose, his only answer was, "She pleases me well." The parents at last yielded to his wishes, and the marriage took place. How many are pursuing the same course as Samson did? How often marriages are formed between the godly and ungodly because inclination governs the selection of husband and wife. The parties do not ask counsel of God, nor have his glory in view. Christianity ought to have a controlling influence upon the marriage relation, but it is too often the case that the motives that led to this union are not in keeping with Christian principles. The parties do not ask counsel of God. Satan is constantly seeking to strengthen his power over the people of God by inducing them to enter into an alliance with his subjects. But the Lord has, in his word, plainly instructed his people, "Do not unite themselves with those who have not the love of God abiding in them." Lesson number one. Children, obey your parents, for this is right in the Lord. Honor your mother and your father, that your days may be long and happy. Verse 4. His father and mother did not know that it was from the Lord, for he was seeking an occasion against the Philistines. At that time, the Philistines had dominion over Israel. God used the occasion to confront the Philistines. Would God have liked Samson to choose a wife that would have supported his mission? Yes, he would. There is lesson number two right there. God can use you even though you've strayed away from His original plan for your life. Some people think God can't use me because I've strayed away from that original plan, but He can use you even if you stray away from His original plan. So if your marriage or life is not what you planned, don't give up. Just give your life up to Christ. Back to the story. Verse 5, then Samson went down with his father and mother to Timnah, and he came to the vineyards of Timnah. And behold, a young lion roared against him, and the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and he tore the lion asunder as one tears a kid. And he had nothing in his hands, but he did not tell his father or his mother what he had done. This one miracle is what makes Samson's story so great. I love the story of when he kills the lion barehanded. How can a man tear a lion up without the Lord giving him the strength? How would you like the Spirit of the Lord to come on you that strong? That'd be wonderful, wouldn't it? Back then, you did not have a car where you could roll up your window and take off when you were attacked by a lion, like at Wildlife Safari. God truly was with Samson, and God still had a mission for him, even though he was heading for the wrong marriage. Verse 7, then he went down and talked with the woman, and she pleased Samson well. Do you realize when Samson's fiancée accepted his marriage proposal, she made what turns out to be a fatal mistake? You will see the mess it gets her into later in the story. Twice her life is threatened, and ultimately she loses it. My personal premarital advice is, the person you marry will contribute to 90% of your happiness or misery. Choose wisely, and how more wisely than wanting God's will for you? Lesson number 3, seek God's advice, not man's, for your premarital counseling. Verses 8 and 9. And after a while he returned to take her, and he turned aside to see the carcass of the lion. And behold, there was a swarm of bees and honey in the body of the lion. He scraped it out into his hands and went on eating it as he went. And he came to his father and mother and gave them some, and they ate. But he did not tell them that he had taken the honey from the carcass of the lion. What did Samson do wrong in this part of the story? Anybody know? Well, he didn't really deceive him. He just didn't tell him. As part of his Nazarite vows, he was not to touch a carcass or go near it. So he went against one of his Nazarite vows. Verse 10, and his father went down to the woman, and Samson made a feast there, for so the young men used to do. And when the people saw him, they brought 30 companions to be with him. And Samson said to them, let me now put a riddle to you, and if you can tell me what it is within the 7 days of the feast and find it out, then I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 festal garments. But if you cannot tell me what it is, then you shall give me 30 linen garments and 30 festal garments. And they said to him, put your riddle that we may hear it. And he said to them, out of the eater came something to eat, out of the strong came something sweet. And they could not in 3 days tell what the riddle was. Did Samson's family do the right thing by joining in the wedding feast? Hard to know, isn't it? This is from Patriarchs and Prophets, page 563. At his marriage feast, Samson was brought into familiar association with those who hated the God of Israel. Whoever voluntarily enters into such relations will feel it necessary to conform to some degree to the habits and customs of his companions. The time spent is worse than wasted. Thoughts are entertained and words are spoken that tend to break down the stronghold of principle and to weaken the soul. Do you enjoy riddles? That was a custom back then, and it is still done today, sometimes with a friendly bet, and sometimes with large wagers. Verse 15, on the fourth day they said to Samson's wife, entice your husband to tell us what the riddle is, lest we burn you in your father's house with fire. Have you invited us here to impoverish us? And Samson's wife wept before him and said, you only hate me. You do not love me. You have put a riddle to my countrymen, and you have not told me what it is. And he said to her, behold, I have not told my parents, my father, nor my mother. And shall I tell you? She wept before him the 7 days that their feast lasted, and on the 7th day he told her, because she pressed him hard. Then she told the riddle to her countrymen. And the men of the city said to him on the 7th day before the sun went down, what is sweeter than honey? What is stronger than a lion? And he said to them, if you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have found out my riddle. These next texts will explain from the Bible what Samson should have known. Proverbs 21:9. It is better to live on the roof than to share a house with a quarrelsome wife. Proverbs 21:19. It is better to live in a desert than with a quarrelsome and ill-tempered wife. It's too bad King Solomon didn't live before Samson. He could have used some advice like that, couldn't he? Also, did you hear what the 30 men said to the future wife of Samson? They threatened her life. How could she have saved her life from this situation? Simply being honest. Tell your future husband the truth. He would have stuck up for her and perhaps moved her away from the dangerous situation. When they came up with the answer to his riddle, did Samson figure out how they obtained the answer? Yes, he did. Lesson number 4. Better to live alone than with a nagging woman. Again, we can read in Proverbs 19:13, a foolish son is ruin to his father, and a quarreling wife is a continual dripping of rain. Drip, 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 it would drive you crazy. Verse 19 through 20, and the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and he went down to Ashkelon and killed 30 men of the town, and took their spoil and gave the festal garments to those who had told the riddle. In hot anger, he went back to his father's house, and Samson's wife was given to his companion who had been his best man. What a tale we weave when we first practice to deceive, isn't it? Here we have a story of 30 men who cheated to get the correct answer. So while they ended up winning the bet, the end result was the prize of 30 dead men's clothes. Not exactly the prize they were counting on, was it? Would you want to wear the suit, no matter how expensive it was, if it had been taken from the body of a dead man? And to top it off, you had caused that person's death? Samson's future father-in-law was not very bright. What did he think would happen when Samson found out that his fiancée had been given to another man? You're dealing with the world's strongest man. Did he not think Samson would retaliate? Chapter 15, verses 1 and 2. After a while, at the time of the wheat harvest, Samson went to visit his wife with a kid goat. And he said, I will go into my wife in the chamber. But her father would not allow him to go in. Her father said, I really thought you utterly hated her, so I gave her to your companion. Is not her younger sister fairer than she? Pray take her instead. After marrying off Samson's first choice to Samson's best friend, now her father tries to give Samson the younger daughter? Crazy. As we read in the next couple of verses, this did not go very well with Samson. How many of you men would like to have your first choice given away to your best friend and then be offered the younger sister? Is this the first time in the Bible that someone was fooled on their wedding day? No, of course not. We all know the story of Jacob, Leah, and Rebekah. Only that time, Jacob was given the older sister and had to work an additional 7 years for the younger sister, who he wanted in the first place. Crazy, isn't it? What would you do if you were caught in that situation? On with our story. Verses 3 through 5. And Samson said to them, "This time I shall be blameless in regard to the Philistines when I do them mischief." So Samson went and caught 300 foxes and took torches, and he turned them tail to tail and put a torch between each pair of tails. And when he had set fire to the torches, he let the foxes go into the standing grain of the Philistines and burned up the shocks and the standing grain as well as the olive orchards. Did you ever wonder how Samson caught 300 foxes? As a kid, I thought, whoa, he was not only very strong, he must have been very fast. That was quite a feat to catch 300 foxes. Sounds crazy, but that is a question I want to ask Samson in heaven. Then put a firebrand between their tails and send them running. That would have been a sight to see. Verse 6. Then the Philistine said, "Who has done this?" And they said, "Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite, because he had taken his wife and given her to his companion." And the Philistines came up and burned her and her father with fire. Sure, they would realize this wasn't Samson's fault, that was their fault. So sad, this poor girl and her family was doomed to die for being connected to Samson. Very sad situation for her. She did not see it coming. Planning to get married, and all this happens. What a mess, wasn't it? Patriarchs and Prophets, page 563, says, "The wife to obtain, whom Samson had transgressed the command of God, proved treacherous to her husband before the close of the marriage feast. Incensed at her deception, Samson forsook her for the time and went alone to his home at Zorah. When afterward relenting, he returned for his bride, he found her the wife of another. His revenge and the wasting of all the fields and the vineyards of the Philistines provoked them to murder her, although their threats had driven her to the deceit with which the trouble began." Samson had already given evidence of his marvelous strength by slaying single-handed a young lion and by killing 30 men of Ashkelon. Now moved by anger for this barbarous murder of his wife, he attacked the Philistines and smote them with great slaughter. Then, wishing a safe retreat from his enemies, he withdrew to the rock of Etham in the tribe of Judah. Verses 7 and 8. And Samson said to them, "If this is what you want to do, I swear I will be avenged upon you, and after that I will quit." And he smote them hip and thigh with great slaughter, and he went down and stayed in the cleft of the rock of Etham. Verses 9 through 17. Then the Philistines came up and encamped in Judah and made a raid on Lehi. And the men of Judah said, "Why have you come up to us?" They said, "We have come up to bind Samson, to do to him as he did to us." Then 3,000 men of Judah went down to the cleft of the rock of Etham and said to Samson, "Do you not know that the Philistines are rulers over us? What then is this that you have done to us?" And he said to them, "As they did to me, so have I done to them." And they said to him, "We have come down to bind you, that we may give you into the hands of the Philistines." And Samson said to them, "Swear to me that you will not fall upon me yourselves." And they said to him, "No, we will only bind you and give you into their hands. We will not kill you." So they bound him with new ropes and brought him up from the rock. When they came to Lehi, the Philistines came shouting to meet him, and the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and the ropes which were on his arms became as flax that has been caught in the fire, and his bonds melted off his hands. And he found a fresh jawbone of an ass, and put his hand and seized it, and with it he slew 1,000 men. And Samson said, with the jawbone of an ass, heaps upon heaps, with the jawbone of an ass I have slain 1,000 men. And when he had finished speaking, he threw away the jawbone out of his hand, and that place was called Ramoth Lehi. The Israelites did not understand Samson's mission, just like the Pharisees and the disciples in Jesus' day did not understand Jesus' mission. God had plans to free them, but they failed to see what he wanted them to do. Patriarchs and Prophets, page 564, says, "To this place he was pursued by a strong force, and the inhabitants of Judah, in great alarm, basely agreed to deliver him to his enemies. Accordingly, 3,000 men of Judah went up to him, but even at such odds, they would not have dared approach him had they not felt assured that he would not harm his own countrymen. Samson consented to be bound and delivered to the Philistines, but first exacted from the men of Judah a promise not to attack him themselves and thus compel him to destroy them. He permitted them to bind him with two new ropes, and he was led into the camp of his enemies amid demonstrations of great joy. But while their shouts were waking the echoes of the hills, the Spirit of Jehovah came mighty upon him. He burst asunder the new strong cords as if they had been flax burned in the fire. Then seizing the first weapon at hand, which only was a jawbone of an ass, was rendered more effective than sword or spear. He smote the Philistines until they fled in terror, leaving 1,000 men dead upon the field." He was like Superman, a real-life superhero. Had the Israelites been ready to unite with Samson and follow up the victory, they might at this time have freed themselves from the power of their oppressors. But they had been dispirited and cowardly. They had neglected the work of God, which God had commanded them to perform in disposing the heathen, and united with them in their degrading practices, tolerating cruelty, so long as it was not directed against themselves. When they were brought under the power of the oppressor, they tamely submitted to the degradation which they might have escaped had only they obeyed God. Even when the Lord raised up a deliverer for them, they would not infrequently desert him and unite with their enemies. Lesson number 5. Stand for God. Never unite with the enemies of God. Do you ever find it easier to side with the enemies of God instead of standing up and supporting and obeying God's servants? Verses 18 and 19. "And he was very thirsty, and he called on the Lord and said, Thou hast granted me this great deliverance by the hand of thy servant, and shall I now die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised? And the Lord split open the hollow place, that is Leah, and there came water from it. And when he drank, his spirit returned, and he was revived. Therefore the name of it is called En-Hakkor. It is at Lehi to this day." Samson must have fought long and hard and fast to be deathly thirsty. He was so weak that God had to perform a miracle to give him water to drink. You know that there's an experiment done to see if one could climb Mount Everest by drinking varying amounts of water. They found out that those who drank an average amount of water could not climb to the top of Mount Everest. Only those who drank very large amounts of water had the strength to climb Mount Everest. Man cannot live for more than a few days without water, but he can live for a month or more without food. Verse 20. "And he judged Israel in the days of the Philistines 20 years. After his victory, the Israelites made Samson judge, and he ruled for 20 years. To summarize what we learned today, even if you do everything right in raising your children, they may make poor choices. If they are adults, you cannot always stop them from their poor choices, but you can always pray for them. God can use you even after you make poor choices if you allow Him to. Children, obey and honor your parents, for this is right in the Lord. Lying and being deceitful is never a good idea. Even religious leaders and parents make mistakes. Lastly, only by keeping close communion with Christ can you know if you are on the right path. Next time, we will discuss the final chapters of Samson's story in chapter 16 of Judges. Let's bow our heads. Dear God, what a wonderful story with such good lessons for us to learn. Help us to put them into practice in our lives. Stay close to you, honor and obey our parents, and put our trust in you completely, that we may follow your path that you have for us. In thy holy name, amen.